So here you are. You've actually done really well. If I could say, knowing you when we were at school together, when I left before, you carried on at school. I've got to say, you punched ahead. If I said, I think you punched ahead of your weight, right? They made you head boy of the school. You were playing Rhodesian rugby. You went into the Air Force. You were flying high in many ways. And in the middle of all this, there's this incredible civil war going on. And only what, 2018, 19, 20, all this was happening around that time. And everything was sort of flying high. And then something happened. Could I say the title of the book, An Arrested Heart? God stepped in. And that brings us to this is the book that challenged me, encouraged me. And what I loved about reading this book was the realness that comes out of this. That in the middle of all that's going on, sometimes we desperately need God more than we realize. And so I'm going to ask you to just tell your story from there, Ray. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks very much, Ray. And yeah, this book is obviously very special to me. I wrote it 10 years ago, and I wrote it kind of under duress in that, you know, I'm a very busy person. I'm very active, and anything that I do, I give it 100%. So, you know, when somebody had mentioned to me, when they heard my story, they said, you need to write this book. And I resisted it because I gave all sorts of reasons why not, you know, because I was so busy with other stuff. And anyway, I think, again, God orchestrated something that made me write the book. And what that was is that I had not been feeling that good. And I also woke up one morning with my left arm completely lame. So I went to see the doctor, and he basically said, I've got a thing called frozen shoulder, which maybe somebody in the congregation would know. But in all my 14 years, I'd never heard of it. And anyway, so he said, well, basically, it means there's nothing we can do for it. It's got to just fix itself. As soon as it came, it'll disappear like that. But it could take anything from a year to 3 years. And my biggest challenge with that was the fact that I'm a very keen sportsman, as it's probably come through, and I love my golf. And so what happened is I couldn't pick up a golf club. You know, I tried one-handed. It didn't work very well. So basically, I had no excuse. So I felt like it was literally 2 o'clock in the morning that I felt like the Holy Spirit waking me up and saying, okay, now you've got no excuse, write the book. So when I wrote the book, I'm not a writer, you know, and in fact, I did get English at school, but I only got 4 O-levels. So I think that your congregation would understand what O-level is, but, you know, it's not even a matric pass in South Africa. So I only got 4 O-levels. So to this day, I still, you know, I question, how did I even get into the Air Force? Because in the Air Force, you've got to have 5 O-levels minimum. So anyway, that's another story on its own. But when I came to write the book, I honestly have to say to you that I feel like it was an inspired book, because the things that I needed to write down, I felt like the Lord had given me those things to write. And the things that I didn't need to write down, I didn't. And in fact, there are a number of stories in there where I told stories of other people and guys that were in the Air Force with me that suffered terrible accidents and things like that. And before I put it in the book, I asked them if they were okay with me putting it in there and if it was accurate. And they came back to me and they said, they can't believe what I remembered of the accident, you know. And so there were certain details that I think went in there that I don't think it's my natural memory or anything like that, but I felt like God asked me to put it in there. So that's what I did. And the book didn't take me long to write. That was the other interesting thing, is that I had never kept notes or journals or anything that like that of my life. But as I started to write, literally it just flowed. And it took me altogether, in that time that I had this frozen shoulder, It took me about a year to write it. And then literally as I finished the book, my frozen shoulder got better. And I could play golf again, you know. So for me, it's not a coincidence. I think it was really an intention of God that I wrote the book. And the truth is, when I wrote the book as well, it was really for my family because, you know, I knew nothing about my grandparents. My surname obviously is Hawkinson. So all I know is that my grandfather was in the Norwegian Navy. And I never met any of my grandparents except one grandmother, but it was like on very short occasions and I didn't really know at all. So I determined that I wanted my kids to know something about my life, you know, and how did they come into the family, and especially the adopted girls, how did they come into our family and why, you know? So that was my main motivation of writing the book. So as I say, I did that in 2010, I gave it to the family and, you know, kind of carried on. And then there were people starting to hear about the book and picking it up. And I think, Ray, one of the things that you said, that it was my intention from the beginning to write this book honestly. And you know, I'm a great believer in authenticity. And so the person that's speaking to you right now, that's the same person that's on Facebook. It's the same person that meets people in the street here. So, you know, I don't hide much about who I am. You know, I know sometimes I may even reveal too much, but it's just how I live, you know. So the main emphasis of the book was the transaction or the transformation that took place in my meeting God, as you said. You know, I had all this, I don't want to say fame, but I was very well known. You know, Rhodesia is quite a small country, and because of my Air Force career and also because of being a sportsman, I knew a lot of people, and I'm a gregarious person. You know, I love meeting people, and so I was pretty well known in Rhodesia. And then the change came, and I moved to South Africa, and I battled to find a job. And so here I was about 28 years old then. I had the 7 years I was 26, and I had the 7 years of war behind me, and you know, all this fame and everything. And then I arrived in South Africa and I wasn't known at all. And so I had to literally go out and find a job. And I got my first job because I played rugby. So guys had heard that I had played rugby, and they offered me a job as a Tiger Oats salesman. So I was selling Tiger Oats, Black Cat peanut butter, Millie Meal, all of that kind of thing to small businesses around a place called East London, funnily enough. And so that's what I did. But what happened is, in the next 3 years, my life literally started to fall apart. So my rugby was still going well. I was doing well with my sport. I made a provincial side here in South Africa. But the rest of my life really started to fall apart. I didn't enjoy my job very much. My relationship with my wife and my children was at a very low ebb. You know, the first 6 years or 7 years of our marriage, I hardly knew her or saw her. And the same with my two children, because I was at war most of the time. And then when I did come back home, it was for a very short space of time. And I was kind of trying to make the transition to being at war in the bush to being a dad and a husband at home. So it was a very difficult time. And then after about 3 years of living in South Africa, I eventually decided, no, I can't do this anymore. And I actually asked my wife for a divorce. And she fought it every way that she could. You know, she was going to church then. My parents were Christians. My brother was a Christian. But I, you know, I just felt I had too much to give up to be a Christian. So we went very separate ways. And eventually, and you know, this is the grace of God, Ray, we talked about you know, the grace and hope that comes with Christ. And the grace of God was to the point that one day God gave her word, and it was from that that scripture that just said, "Be still and know that I'm God." And God put a word in her ear just to say, whatever Ray says to you, go agree with it. So the next time I went to her and I said, I want a divorce, and that's about the 10th time I'd asked her, she then agreed. And it took us about 10 days to divorce, and the grounds of divorce is that we were incompatible. We couldn't get on together anymore. So what happened is the divorce happened very quickly. I resigned from my job. I moved to a little town in the north of South Africa and stayed with a friend who was a pilot with me in the Air Force. And I tried to get my commercial pilot license. But what actually happened is everything just fell apart, literally. You know, I tried to do everything in my strength, but I just didn't have the capacity. There was just too much trauma in my life, too much anger, too much that I'm dealing with about losing my country, you know, losing my cause, that I literally, for the first time in my life, I'd actually turned to a doctor to ask for antidepressants and for sleeping tablets because I wasn't sleeping at night. So one night I got to a point that I just thought, you know what, this is just not worth it. It's not worth trying to fight, and I've lost everything anyway. And I literally tried to take an overdose of these pills. I literally took every pill that was in both of those bottles. And I even left a note with a friend of mine to say, you know, just tell my wife that I love her. It's the last thing that I wanted to write. I literally tried to, you know, end it all that night. All I got for my trouble is the next morning I woke up and I was as sick as a dog. I'm not kidding. I sat on the toilet, literally, sorry to be graphic, but I spent the rest of the day literally on the toilet. And then I was also getting sick. And so everything that was in there literally came out. And the thought that went through my mind is that even this last thing that I'm trying to do on earth, even this I've messed up. So, you know, so any pride I had in who I was and what I'd achieved in my life, and that literally, I can almost say, went down the toilet. and the grace of God was that night, you know, after having this horrendous day of being sick. It's the only time it ever happened to me, and I'll swear to this on a Bible that I heard an audible voice that just said, get right with me and go back to your wife. And I wasn't quite sure who this voice was. I thought it may be my friend, but he wasn't there. And so the next morning, I called the first pastor I could find in the local newspaper. And this guy came around at 6 o'clock in the morning and asked me what I wanted, you know. So I told him basically my life story, and he said, well, it's very clear. And interestingly, Ray, he was actually a Baptist pastor as well. And he came to my house, and I basically told him my story. And he said, well, you know, you've got to make right with God. And then, you know, I guess go back to your wife. So I made a commitment to Christ. And I think the interesting thing, you know, I know some people, it's like a transition. It's a steady transition, or they've always known God, and you know, it hasn't been a major thing to say that they've now got a faith. But I have to say, for me, it was a massive change. It was transformational, you know. And I also have to say this. It had nothing to do with me. And what I mean by that, you know, I was as far removed from God as possible. And there was nothing I had in me to actually even cry out to God. You know, I know some people do that. With me, it wasn't that at all. He literally did everything. He went and he reached down and grabbed me out of the pit that I was in and literally transformed me. You know, so all those things that I thought that I'd have to give up, you know, in my life before Christ, I didn't have to give up anything. He literally just took it out of me, you know, the desires that I had. And I, you know, a lot of us don't want to admit it, but, you know, because of the rugby and the war and everything that went on, a lot of us were quite heavy drinkers. And that was one of the things I always thought, I'll never give up drinking with my friends. But literally immediately, God took that desire out of my life. And then he said a second thing to me. He said that you're going to love your wife like you've never loved her before. And, you know, and this is the same lady that I've divorced, you know. So, and then the third thing, which was very significant at the time, I couldn't receive it, is that he said, I'm going to use you to minister to a race that's different to yours. And, you know, it was interesting, right? Because I never actually thought of myself as a racist. But the one thing that I've known and learned as I've gone along is that certainly because of the color of my skin and the country we grew up in, I unconsciously did think of myself as superior just because of the fact of the color of my skin. You know, so obviously, you know, it's a very, very big issue in the world today. But at that time, when I heard that word from God, I couldn't receive it, to be honest. You know, I just couldn't see that happening, that I would be ministering to people of a different race to me. So anyway, so I kind of logged it in there and went on with my life. And then the interesting thing is then I called my wife and I told her, you know, I said, you won't believe what's happened. And she said, what? And she wasn't that keen to hear from me, unfortunately. And I said to her, well, I've just given my heart to Christ. And she said, and so? And then I said, God has told me that I'm coming back to you. And she said, I don't want you back. So she got her life together without me and was doing quite well, actually. And so to cut a very long story short, I basically went back home and I started to date my wife all over again, you know. So my six-year-old daughter would be at the door and I'd knock on the door of the house I used to live in, and she would be standing and say, hi, Dad, what do you want? And I'd say, oh, I've come to take your mom out. And she said, well, Mom said you must wait at the door. So I went through the whole process of courting my wife all over again. And after a period of time, we went and saw our pastor and, you know, spoke to him about where we're at. And he was overjoyed, you know, and he just said, no, well, I think you guys are ready to get remarried to each other, you know. So there was no manual anywhere, and we couldn't find anything in a bookshop about how do you do this. So what we did is we just decided to put an ad in the paper and tell people where we're going to get married. And then we had what we call here in South Africa, bring and bri. I guess some people call it a potluck, or so everybody just brings something and we all add it together. And if you want drinks, bring your own drinks and that kind of thing. So, yeah, so that's what we did. We got remarried. So we were married for just over 6.5 years the first time, and then we were divorced for nearly a year. And then we got remarried in 1984. So we've been remarried now for, sure, I've got to work it out now, 38 years. So, yeah, or 37 years. And it's been an incredible journey, you know. So we got back together, and obviously, you know, the grace of God was very, very present in my wife's life. In that, you know, she had a lot of forgiving to do. She was watching me like a hawk to see, you know, is this a genuine change, or is it just that I'm missing the comforts of home? And but it was a radical change. You know, I still carried on playing rugby for a while, but when I went to play rugby, I didn't drink anymore. From going home at 2-3 o'clock in the morning after a rugby party, I would surprise her by getting home at like 6 or 7 in the evening after having a couple of cokes. So I guess the proof was in the pudding, you know, and it's just the way that I was towards her as well. You know, I didn't have a lot of time for my wife or my children when I was younger, you know, and I can give reasons and excuses, but the fact is I didn't make them a priority. So, you know, God really challenged me with that, and we started our second life together as a married couple. And our daughter went to school on the Monday after our wedding, and told her teacher that her mom and dad just got married, and she was 6 years old. You know, so the teacher was a bit confused, and then we actually had to explain to her what actually went on. You know, so it's been an incredible testimony as well. To a lot of people, you know, I'm totally committed to people trying to work it out, and you know, and if God can do what He did in my life, I'm a great believer that nobody is too far lost and too far away from the love of God. You know, He proved to me it doesn't matter how far away I am and how much I may reject Him, He will always keep reaching out to us. You know, so that's an incredible testimony of the grace and the love of God, that he doesn't give up on us even when we give up on ourselves. So very, very soon after we got married, I got a really good job, was doing well. We bought our first house and we had two cars. And then I went on an outreach to that little country of Lesotho. And on that outreach, I felt that God, you know, there's that scripture where it says, Lord, here I am, you know, or Lord says, who can I send? And I put my hand up as a very new Christian saying, okay, Lord, I'm here, where, you know, send me. And so I went back home. My wife took a while for her to understand because, you know, we just bought this house. I had a good job, but just getting our life together. And then, you know, I felt like it was time to move on. And so I resigned from my job. We packed our house, we sold it. And a few months later, we had headed off into a mission organization called Youth with a Mission. And we weren't exactly youth, but, you know, Youth with a Mission is it's a worldwide organization that has people from every walk of life and every age group. And so anyway, yeah, so that's what we did. In June 1988, we stepped into missions and completely, completely reliant on God. We had no salary. I had resigned from a very good salary, and we really felt like God just said to us, just trust me and I'll look after you. So that's what happened. And Ray, my journey since then, and that I've recorded a lot of that in the book as well. Well, when I say my journey, our journey as a couple has been an incredible, incredible experience. You know, with no set salary, God has called me all over the world, and I've been to amazing places to go. And I'm not really a preacher. I'm more a sharer of my life, if I could put it that way. So for me, everything is ministry. You know, I don't regard. So when somebody asked me about those children that we looked after in Lesotho, and holding an HIV/AIDS baby in my arms, that equates the same to me as talking to the guy that's sweeping my street or sweeping the sand off the pavement at our beach. They are exactly the same to me. And ministry is just sharing our lives with those people and sharing what God has done, you know. So the testimony that we have, you know, people have asked me, well, maybe you didn't have to go through the divorce, you know, maybe you should have just worked it out. And I don't understand all of that. But what I do understand is that even in those circumstances, God has turned it around and he's used it for his glory. So. So we'd been many years in missions, and then one of the places that we got called to in 1999 was this country of Lesotho. So when we went there, my main focus was discipleship and training. And then my wife came to me one day and said, you know, there was quite a big intervention that took place in Lesotho. And the South African army came in, and it actually turned into a mass not a revolution, but, you know, the main street got completely burnt out, and the country took a serious knock. It's a very poor country anyway, with about 70% of the men working in South Africa. So they only come home like 1 month in the year. So it's a really poor country. And then this intervention hit. And then my wife came to me and said, you know, I'm just noticing many more children in the streets, and we've got to do something, you know. And we were not on a salary, so anything that we started, we had to just trust God with it. So what happened is my wife ended up in a hospital in Lesotho, and she came across these five children or five babies that had been abandoned, that were HIV positive and weren't even being cared for by the staff, because the staff kind of reckoned, you know, in those days there were no antiretrovirals. So the staff reckoned, well, they're going to die anyway. So, you know, why bother? So so what happened is my wife and daughter, who was working with us at the time, they would go every single day and go and minister to these children by changing them, cleaning them. You know, you can imagine the conditions. And they did this for a couple of months. And then my wife came to me and said, no, you know, it's such a pain to go to the hospital. And So we went and prayed and asked God, and he basically gave us a vision to open a little center. And we kind of had a little, we started with a one-room house with five cots or cribs, and took these five babies out. It ended up, by the time we picked them up, there were actually seven. So we started with these seven babies who had no money in the bank, just a desire to do what Jesus would do in that situation. So we took the babies in and started in a tiny little room and employed four ladies with the employment contract saying, we hope to pay you this amount at the end of the month. And God has been faithful. So over the next 10 years, again, you know, I can talk about this forever, but over the next 10 years, we ended up caring for 350 babies that had been abandoned or were affected by HIV/AIDS. And of that 350, about 260 eventually got adopted literally all over the world. And there was no adoption policy in Lesotho. So we were helping the government to set up some kind of adoption program. And neither of us are qualified in that, but it was just for us common sense. And so we saw amazing things happen. And as I said earlier, you know, if we knew what was coming, we probably would have run in the opposite direction. But yeah, so we were very blessed and privileged to be able to receive these children and see them going into homes. Unfortunately, because there were no antiretrovirals, we lost 33 babies in the process. So that was very difficult, especially for my wife as a mom. Every single funeral was hard on her. And then she said, I can't do this anymore. And then, you know, God would give her the grace and the next one would come and we just carry on. So it's an incredible story of the grace and love of God. And we built a center that's worth about 18 million rand. I think that's about 2 million pounds, I think. But it had three children's homes, children's houses, a creche, a clinic, admin buildings. So anyway, anything that we needed. And we employed our own care worker and social worker. And all of that, we trusted God for the money for that. We weren't funded by the government at all. And we started to have people, many Christians that were looking at what we were doing and helping us. So, so that was the journey of Beautiful Gate. And as I said, we built it up over 10 years. And in that, towards the end of the time, as I said, our biological children had grown up and left home. And then my wife said she wants to have children in her house, despite the fact that we were looking after these other babies. And anyway, so we took the two girls very briefly. The one girl, her mom gave birth and died in childbirth of AIDS. Her dad died a month later of AIDS, and she was HIV positive and weighed 1 kilogram at birth. So they basically said, well, take her home until she dies. And then the other little girl was abandoned by her mom. She was left on the bed, and her mom walked out, gave wrong information about who she was, where she lived. So those two girls in particular, they were not biological sisters, but those were the two that we felt we could take into our home. So while we were running Beautiful Gate, we took the two girls in. And as I mentioned, it's 18 years now, and this year is a very significant year in that one of the girls has gone back. She's also had struggles in her own life growing up, but she had to leave school at about 14. She's a very artistic young lady, and so we've been getting her art lessons. So she's back there serving where she grew up as a baby, and the other one is now just across all expectations, folks. I've got to tell you that she had a very difficult high school, but she's pulled herself together, and she had an incredible last year, and she did well enough that she actually got a bursary as well. And so she's now gone off to university and a bursary. So we kind of hit empty nest syndrome at the age of 66 and 64, and we're not quite sure what to do with ourselves.
So, Ray, we could, in the church, I mean, we could listen much more, but we've got the children downstairs that are finishing now. So we're going to, I think that's a good place to sort of round it up. Ray, it's been amazing. It's been an amazing story, and a story of God's grace. Can you, in closing, share what I think you've already shared it, but again, what the deep takeaway over from all of this has been, as God has put your life together again, in just a sentence, just as we close.
Absolutely, Ray. I think the bottom line for me is just that unending, unconditional love of God, that and His grace that He extends to us for nothing, you know. And obviously, He paid a big price, but the grace is free. And so I would say to anybody that's there, you know, and I know we all go through difficult times, and these are difficult times that we're living in. But everybody that's listening in, I would say to you, no matter what circumstance you're in now, don't ever, ever forget about the grace of God and the love of God. He does love you in the midst of everything that's going on. And for those that may be searching that don't have a relationship with Christ, so all I can say to you is that, you know, in these times, He is our only hope. I think that's what Pastor Ray is going to be speaking on next week. But there is hope, and the only hope is in Him. So that's what I would leave with you today, you know. So, Ray, I thank you so much for the opportunity to share with you and your folks today. And I trust that it has spoken into their lives through His Spirit.
Ray, thank you so much. We appreciate very much. Yeah, you might not be able to hear, but we very deeply appreciate the sharing today. If you have an opportunity, I know time, but if you're able to stay and share, especially with our Zoom congregation, there may be many who'd still want to chat to you. Please feel free to do that. But we have deeply, deeply appreciated your testimony. May God bless you, bless Sue, and we look forward to seeing. And the great thought as well is the provision of God. When your back is against the wall, and you don't know where the next paycheck's coming from, but God knows, right? And
amen.
And having that faith is critical as well. And never easy, but always blessed when we see God provide. So thank you so much. Ray, God bless you. Thank you. What a brilliant, brilliant morning we've had together.
Thank you very much. We
are encouraged. Thank you. Bless you. So we're going to continue as we close the service now by singing that beautiful hymn, Open the Eyes of My Heart. We talked about an arrested heart, and we can identify with the challenges of life. We all have our challenges. We all sometimes feel overwhelmed and despair and places of real need, and know that grace of God is deeper than anything. And so let us sing, Open the Eyes of My Heart, Lord, to see Jesus.